Thank you for joining us for another podcast from the Commonwealth Club.
I am Michael Lee, your quarterly chairman. Our speaker today is the head of the United Farm Workers of America, Cesar Chavez. Mr. Chavez founded and still leads the first successful farm workers union in United States history. He is the man the late Senator Robert Kennedy called one of the heroic figures of our time, and who many credit with the passage of the historic California Labor Relations Act of 1975. Mr. Chavez was born in 1927 near Yuma, Arizona. At age 10, his family lost its land to the Depression and began a bleak life as migrant farm workers. Mr. Chavez himself left school after the eighth grade to help support his family. In 1952, after serving in the Navy, getting married, and settling in the San Jose area, Mr. Chavez met an organizer for the Community Service Organization, a barrio-based self-help group, and, as they say, the rest is history. Within months, Mr. Chavez was a full-time organizer with the CSO, coordinating voter registration, battling racial discrimination, and forming new chapters across California and Arizona. Eventually, Mr. Chavez served as CSO's national director, but his dream was to create an organization to help migrant farm workers. So in 1962, he moved to Delano, California, and founded the National Farm Workers Association. Next followed years of difficult and dangerous organizing efforts as he built up his union, but build it up he did. Beginning in 1965, he led a successful five-year boycott against California grape growers that rallied millions of supporters to the UFW and forged perhaps the broadest coalition in labor history. As a measure of its effectiveness, by 1975, a nationwide Harris poll showed that 17 million American adults had stopped buying grapes. Today, although the farm worker is far better off than he was when Mr. Chavez started his organizing efforts, life is still hard. But he remains a revered, almost mystical figure who will continue to have a profound impact on the future of farm workers and Hispanics in California, the topic of his address today. Please join me in welcoming him.
Thank you very much, Mr. Lee, Mrs. Black, ladies and gentlemen. 21 years ago, this last September, on a lonely stretch of railroad track paralleling U.S. Highway 101 near Salinas, 32 Bracero farm workers lost their lives in a tragic accident. The Braceros had been imported from Mexico to work on California farms. They died when their bus, which was converted from a flatbed truck, drove in front of a freight train. Conversion of the bus had not been approved by any government agency. The driver had tunnel vision. Most of the bodies laid unidentified for days. No one, including the grower who employed the workers, even knew their names. Today, thousands of farm workers live under savage conditions, beneath trees, and amid garbage and human excrement near tomato fields in San Diego County, tomato fields which use the most modern farm technology. Vicious rats gnaw at them as they sleep. They walk miles to buy food at inflated prices, and they carry in water from irrigation ditches. Child labor is still common in many farm areas. As much as 30% of Northern California's garlic harvesters are underage children. Kids as young as 6 years old have voted in state conducted union elections since they qualified as workers. Some 800,000 underage children work with their families harvesting crops across America. Babies born to migrant workers suffer 25% higher infant mortality rates than the rest of the population. Malnutrition among migrant workers' children is 10 times higher than the national rate. Farm workers' average life expectancy is still 49 years, compared to 73 years for the average American. All my life, I have been driven by one dream, one goal, one vision: to overthrow a farm labor system in this nation that treats farm workers as if they were not important human beings. Farm workers are not agricultural implements. They are not beasts of burden to be used and discarded. That dream was born in my youth. It was nurtured in my early days of organizing. It has flourished. It has been attacked. I'm not very different from anyone else who has ever tried to accomplish something with his life. My motivation comes from my personal life, from watching what my mother and father went through when I was growing up, from what we experienced as migrant workers in California. That dream, that vision, grew from my own experience with racism, with hope, with a desire to be treated fairly and to see my people treated as human beings and not as chattel. It grew from anger and rage, emotions I felt 40 years ago when people of my color were denied the right to see a movie or eat at a restaurant in many parts of California. It grew from the frustration and humiliation I felt as a boy who couldn't understand how the growers could abuse and exploit farm workers when there were so many of us and so few of them. Later in the 50s, I experienced a different kind of exploitation. In San Jose, in Los Angeles, and in other urban communities, we, the Mexican-American people, were dominated by a majority that was Anglo. I began to realize what other minority people had discovered, that the only answer, the only hope, was in organizing. More of us had to become citizens. We had to register to vote, and people like me had to develop the skills it would take to organize, to educate, to help empower the Chicano people. I spent many years before we founded the union learning how to work with people. We experienced some successes in voter registration, in politics, in battling racial discrimination. Successes in an era when Black Americans were just beginning to assert their civil rights, and when political awareness among Hispanics was almost non-existent. But deep in my heart, I knew I could never be happy unless I tried organizing the farm workers. I didn't know if I would succeed, but I had to try. All Hispanics, urban and rural, young and old, are connected to the farm workers' experience. We had all lived through the fields, or our parents had. We shared that common humiliation. How could we progress as a people, even if we lived in the cities, while the farm workers, men and women of our color, were condemned to a life?
My name is Adam Hirschfelder. I am with the programming team here at the Commonwealth Club. This is a very special program for us tonight. Right before we have started the program, we were playing audio from a program that the Commonwealth Club held in 1984 with Cesar Chavez. It was a powerful speech and one of the most well-known speeches that Mr. Chavez gave, and we were honored to host him then. Tonight, of course, we are hosting Teresa Romero, almost 40 years later, for a conversation about the challenges that farm workers face today. So, Irene de Baracua, the Director of Outreach and Communications for Lideres Campesinas, an organization that organizes female farm workers, and we are thrilled to have her as moderator. Now, it is an honor, one that I never thought I would do, to introduce the president of the United Farm Workers Union, Teresa Romero. Teresa was the first Latina and the first immigrant woman to lead a national union. She is the third leader of the United Farm Workers since Cesar Chavez led the union. And it is a deep, deep honor to introduce her at this time to come up and give a talk. And then she'll be in a conversation with Irene. Teresa.
Thank you very much, Adam, for that kind introduction. Let me say something in Spanish. Quiero darle la bienvenida a los trabajadores que están aquí. Ellos son las personas, ellos y ellas son las personas que ponen la comida en nuestras mesas día con día. I had the opportunity to just chat with them briefly before we started, and I was just trying to figure out altogether how many years of experience they had. And we passed 150 years of experience just with this small group. So I want to thank you. Gracias. Gracias por todo lo que hacen. All of us were shocked and saddened by the mass shooting, deaths of farm workers in San Mateo County. Maybe it was especially horrific because it happened in your own backyard. That brutality also exposed horrific living and working conditions, as well as credible claims of serious labor violations. But it was hardly an aberration in the long and sordid history of farm worker exploitation and oppression in this state and our nation. On the 28th of January, it was 75 years since the plane wreck at the Los Gatos Canyon in 1948. A DC-3 airliner with 32 people caught fire and crashed into Los Gatos Canyon in western Fresno County. The dead included 28 Bracero farm workers being deported. The Anglo pilots, flight attendant, and immigration officer were identified. But most of the farm workers were just listed as deportees. The deportees' remains were buried in unnamed graves by the Latino community and the Catholic Diocese of Fresno. Songwriter Woody Guthrie heard of the tragedy on the radio. The announcer reportedly said they were just deportees. He was incensed and wrote a beautiful tribute, Deportee, or Plane Wreck, to Los Gatos, later sung by Bob Dylan and John Baez, among many others. The refrain goes, "Goodbye to my Juan, goodbye Rosalita, adios mis amigos, Jesús y María. You won't have your names when you ride the big airplane. All they will call you will be deportees." A professor, Tim Hernandez, recently researched the deportees, found their names, and funded a memorial gravestone at the cemetery. The deportees finally got their names back. Almost 60 years ago, on September 17, 1963, a freight train collided with a farm labor bus outside the small farming town of Chular in the Salinas Valley. 32 Bracero farm workers died. Before a similar audience at the Commonwealth Club in 1984, Cesar Chavez opened his remarks by recounting that crash. He said, "Most of the bodies laid unidentified for days. No one, including the grower who employed the workers, even knew their names." 49 years ago, on January 14, 1974, 19 lettuce workers died from the farm labor bus careened off the road into a drainage ditch near Blythe, California. Approaching Blythe before sunrise, the bus missed a turn. Seats and farm workers were thrown in front of the bus. Most workers died from drowning in the shallow ditch while trapped by the wreckage. 24 years ago, on February 11, 1999, 13 tomato workers died when a farm labor van crashed into a tractor trailer in the pre-dawn darkness of West Fresno County. Instead of seats bolted to the floor, the workers sat on a wooden bench with no seatbelts. Upon impact, unsecured sharp tools flew at the workers. Some of them were speared. 5 years ago, early in the morning of March 13, 2018, farm workers Santos Hilario Garcia and Maricela Garcia Perfecto, husband and wife, just dropped off their daughter at school in Delano and were heading to find work. they were undocumented. Santos, who was driving, saw lights flashing in the rearview mirror. He thought it was the police, so he stopped. When he realized they were ICE agents, the couple, fearing separation from loved ones, panicked and took off, fleeing at high speed with two ICE vehicles in hot pursuit. Santos lost control of the car, hit a utility pole, and flipped over. Both husband and wife died, leaving six orphan kids, ages 8 to 18. Tragedies such as these regularly befall farm workers. They usually go unnoticed. Yet, since the deaths of Half Moon Bay, some people are asking why we keep seeing these injustices. What is the cause? In his eulogy before the families of the dead lettuce workers in 1974 in Calexico, Cesar Chavez asked if these tragedies are deliberate. They are deliberate, he answered, in the sense that they are the direct result of a farm labor system that treats workers like agricultural implements and not as human beings. They are important because of the love they give to their husbands, their children, their wives, their parents, all of those who are close to them and who need them. They are important because of the work that they do. They're not implements to be used and discarded. They're human beings who sweat and sacrifice to bring food to the tables of millions of people throughout the world. As we weigh the historical and contemporary plight of farm workers, we can see that the San Mateo County shootings 2 months ago were not an exemption. Rather, they were the direct result of fundamental injustice and indignity built into the system of farm labor in this state and nation, dating back more than a century and a half. Agriculture is still one of the richest industries in California. Cash receipts for all crops surpassed $51 billion in 2021. For more than a century and a half, the profits of California agriculture have been built on the backs of generation after generation of exploited and oppressed farm workers, often dark-skinned immigrants imported to work in our fields. Since the 19th century, California fields have been worked by Chinese, Japanese, Mexican, Filipino, African Americans, the Oakleys and Arkis, Mexicans again, later Yemeni and Punjabi workers. When farm workers rose up in protest, growers broke their strikes by pitting one race against another, using Mexicans to break strikes by Filipinos and vice versa. Growers marshaled all the social, economic, political, and legal institutions in rural California to crush organizing. Every strike was brutally broken. Every union was defeated. Strikers and organizers were beaten, blacklisted, deported, shot, killed. Growers were so powerful that when nearly all other American workers won the right to organize into unions, to be paid a minimum wage, and overtime under the New Deal in the 30s, farm and domestic workers were and remained excluded. Segregationist lawmakers demanded FDR exclude farm workers because in the South, they were largely African Americans. It was pure racism. As one South lawmaker put it, you cannot put the Negro and the white men in the same basis. That racist exclusion from the right to organize and be paid overtime continues to this day in most of the United States, except California, where the UFW ended the exclusion through legislation. Farm workers' exclusion from collective bargaining ended in California in 1975, when Cesar Chavez and the UFW, with the help from millions of boycotting consumers, pushed through the Agricultural Labor Relations Act. The UFW didn't end farm workers' exclusion from overtime pay in California after 8 hours a day until 2016. We recently also won overtime in Oregon and Washington State. In the UFW, we have an expression: the laws on the books are not the laws in the fields. When horror stories emerge about farm workers' abuse, such as after the San Mateo County shootings, the industry rightly observes that California has the toughest laws and rules in the nation protecting farm workers. But too often, enforcement of those laws falls far short of what it is promised in statute and regulation. Take the tragedy of Maria Isabel Jimenez Vasquez. May 14, 2008 was a hot day. Maria Isabel, only 17, had just arrived from Oaxaca, Mexico, to earn money to send home. She had been working 9 hours. There was no shade. There was no training for foremen or workers on what to do if someone got ill from the heat. All these protections and more were demanded by the state of California since 2005. Back then, the United Farm Workers convinced Republican Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger to issue the first state regulations in the country to prevent death and illness from extreme heat. This was after a series of farm worker heat deaths. At 3:40 p.m., Maria Isabel fell dizzy and unsteady. She didn't recognize Florentino, her 19-year-old fiancé. She passed out in his arms. The foreman stood over them, glaring. Maria Isabel was placed unconscious in a nearby van with no air conditioning. It was hotter inside the van. Maria Isabel waited for the workers to finish as they relied on the same vehicle. The driver decided that she needed medical care. On the way to the clinic, the foreman called the fiancé and said, "If you take her to the clinic," the foreman said, "don't say she was working for us. Say she became sick because she was jogging to get exercise. Since she's underage, it will create a big problem for us." They got to the clinic at 5:15 p.m., more than an hour and a half after Maria Isabel was stricken. An ambulance took her to the hospital. Her temperature was 108.4 degrees, far beyond what the human body can take. Maria Isabel's heart stopped 6 times in 2 days. Doctors revived her. On the third day, her good heart stopped for the last time, and efforts to revive her failed. The doctors learned she was pregnant. She probably never knew she would have been a mother. Doctors said if emergency medical help had been summoned or she had gone to the hospital sooner, Maria Isabel might have survived. She was buried in her wedding dress. Countless workers' lives have been saved and illnesses prevented because of those heat standards the UFW helped win. Today, decades after California became the first state to grant farm workers unionization rights, workers still face daunting challenges in unionizing, from growers who sternly resist the right to organize and have a union. Growers flaunt with impunity the law's protection. One of the most recent cases before the Agricultural Labor Relations Board is insightful. At Premier Raspberry Farm, with about 500 workers in Watsonville, the farm workers did everything right. They organized. They went on strike. They voted for the UFW in an election held during the strike. They asked to bargain for a union contract. The company refused to bargain at all. it refused to participate in the state's mandatory mediation process. Under it, workers can bring in neutral state mediators to hammer out contracts when growers won't negotiate them. Premier challenged the constitutionality of the mandatory mediation law, even as it was being upheld by the California Supreme Court. 3 years after workers began organizing, Premier exhausted all its legal remedies. Within 10 days, according to the State Farm Labor Board, Premier suspiciously shut down operations. The company never intended to abide by the election results or the state-ordered union contract. The workers received only a modest financial settlement, a small fraction of what Premier would have paid in wages and benefits had the company complied with the law. The horrific conditions revealed by the mass shooting in Half Moon Bay are yet another reminder of why unionization remains so necessary. Squalling and deplorable living conditions were reported in the press after the murders. We understand Cal OSHA, the State Labor Commissioner's Office, and San Mateo County officials are investigating allegations of wage theft, other labor violations, and housing violations at the two farms. Now, contrast two Half Moon Bay mushroom farms with a unionized Monterey mushroom farm just down Highway 1 in Watsonville in Morgan Hills. Monterey Mushroom, one of the largest fresh mushroom producers in America, employs about 1,000 workers who have been working under UFW contract for years. The average unionized mushroom picker earns $45,000 a year with full family medical, dental, and vision coverage, paid holidays and vacations, a defined benefit pension plan, job security, dignity and fairness on the job, and much more. Farm labor does not have to be this dead-end, low-wage, no-benefit occupation. We have shown the difference the union can make. California took a historic step forward last year with the signing of AB 2183. The right to vote in America was enshrined in law with the passage of the 1965 Voting Rights Act. So too in California, the right of farm workers to vote in union elections has been enshrined in law since the passing of the historic 1975 Farm Labor Act. Yet, when field workers try voting in a union, they are still stuck back in 1975, when just about the only way political voters could vote was at said polling places. Under the 1975 Farm Labor Law, agricultural workers can only vote at voting places, nearly always set on growers' property. There, they must run a gauntlet of threats and intimidation and deportation by employer foremen, supervisors, and labor contractors. To preserve the status quo, growers argue they only want to help farm workers by preserving the right to vote in secret ballot elections, held nearly exclusively on grower property. That's like making a progressive voters of color only vote at MAGA headquarters. The opinion editor of the McClatchy newspaper chain in California skewered these industry claims by noting that is how absolute power over the powerless works. You deny them their rights while pretending you are doing them a favor. So over a two-year period, the United Farm Workers took up in California the same fight underway across the nation to protect voting rights. During the marathon campaign, farm workers gave up days of pay to lobby and protest. They spent time away from families. Last year, workers undertook a grueling 24-day, 335-mile pilgrimage, or march, up the Central Valley to state capital in the triple-digit heat summer. They endured genuine physical hardship. I know, because I walked every step of the way with them. And I'm no spring chicken anymore. Nearly 7,000 farm workers and supporters joined us for the final distance to the Capitol in Sacramento last August. After the three-week march, workers and supporters held a month of vigils at the Capitol and across the state, urging the governor to sign their bill. More broad public support was mobilized by farm workers last year than at any time in decades. All those sacrifices by field workers and supporters convinced lawmakers to pass and Governor Newsom to sign a UFW-sponsored bill with 50 legislative co-authors, a measure updating the 1975 farm labor law. It gives farm workers the right to vote for the comfort and security of their own homes, free from threats and intimidation and deportation. The UFW is now gearing up for new farm worker organizing and elections later this year. This law is not a silver bullet. The desperate poverty of many farm workers, their lack of immigration status, and most recently, the loss of so much work and wages from California rains and floods, all mean many workers still would rather keep their heads down and work today, and even in brutal conditions, than risk fighting back. But for the first time in decades, farm workers who chose to stand up for their rights will at least be in a fair fight, without the union election process rigged against them. The UFW has in recent years achieved much progress for farm workers, even as we know so much more work remains undone. The UFW is helping pull the wages of many agricultural workers in some California's largest farming regions up above the minimum wage. Last year, for the first time, California farm workers fully benefited from overtime. Farm worker pay has also risen from many negotiated and renegotiated UFW contracts. They cover vegetable, berry, wine grape, tomato, dairy, date, feedlot, and citrus workers in three states. Most of California's mushroom industry is unionized. Another renegotiated UFW contract with one of the nation's biggest vegetable producers provides pay and benefits increases for 1,500 workers. The employer pays 100% of the $700 per month cost of complete family, medical, dental, and vision coverage. The average unionized fresh tomato picker in California earns about $38 an hour, the highest paid tomato workers in America. Unionized farm workers are still a small percentage of overall workforce. But when the union is active in the area, non-union growers are compelled to treat and pay people better. Our very existence improves conditions. In 2019, the UFW sponsored bills to ban chlorpyrifos in California agriculture. This is the toxic chemical damaging the brains and lowering the IQ of infants and young children. Moving our bills through the state capitol convinced Governor Newsom to eliminate use of chlorpyrifos that year through executive action. With at least half of U.S. farm workers undocumented, according to the U.S. Labor Department, the biggest concern voiced by many of them today is their immigration status. It makes them so vulnerable to being abused and mistreated. So the UFW has become a leader in the national fight for immigration reform. With our allies, we negotiated with national grower groups and lawmakers from both parties to craft compromise bipartisan agricultural immigration reform. It would let immigrant farm workers earn permanent legal status and a pathway to citizenship by continuing to work in agriculture. That measure passed the U.S. House with 30 Republican votes, the most bipartisan support for any recent immigration bill. President Biden embraces it. But the proposal stalled in the Senate, like much other vital legislation, because of the filibuster. Republicans hold over the House makes progress in the near future extremely hard, but we remain ready to work with anyone to achieve this vital priority. Cesar Chavez regularly talks about the movement's achievements, but one of the places he chose to be reflective was during his address to the Commonwealth Club in November 9, 1984. Shirley Temple Black, then president of the club, invited Caesar, but he was initially cautious. She was a Nixon Republican. So Caesar asked his aide and speechwriter, Mark Grossman, who is with us tonight, to check it out. Miss Black quickly returned his call, explaining she was a big fan. She had kept her membership in the Screen Actors Guild after her child acting days had ended to support other actors. Years later, when she needed major surgery, Mrs. Black found it was paid for because of the union membership. Caesar's address to the Commonwealth Club is now in anthologies of speeches by great Americans. It was the first time he read from a text, thinking that's what politicians do. Mark convinced him and convinced me. Some speeches are so important that every word matters. During the luncheon forum before a crowd of hundreds at the big hotel in the financial district, Mrs. Black and Caesar had lunch together on the dais. They got along like old friends, sharing interest in gardening and vegetarianism. In his remarks, he discussed traveling for years across North America while championing the farm workers. He met countless people, especially Latinos, but people from all walks of life, who would tell him how the farm workers inspired them to be the first in their family to go to college, to become professionals or business person, to run for public office. He had a resounding message for all of us in that speech. Caesar said, "Once social change begins, it cannot be reversed. You cannot uneducate the person who has learned to read. You cannot humiliate the person who feels pride. You cannot oppress the people who are not afraid anymore. We all stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. My predecessors were born in the United States. I was born and raised in Mexico, the granddaughter of a Zapotec woman whose indigenous roots go back before the Spanish conquest. I first came to this country in my 20s, seeking, like millions of immigrants, to make a better life. My understanding of the farm workers' struggles hails from the fact that when I came to America, I did not speak English. I would only watch English television, no Spanish. I wanted to learn English so badly, every day I strive to master 5 to 7 sentences, constantly repeating them all day. Watching TV, I heard the word enjoy, but had the hardest time figuring out what it meant. Finally, after struggling, I learned its meaning, and when I did, I really enjoyed it. I appreciate what it means to come to a new country, to be exposed to a new language, a new culture, new people, and to learn to adapt to it all. So I have come to equally be proud of my Mexican and Zapotecan heritage and my U.S. citizenship. My immigrant background is why I can uniquely relate to a farm labor workforce that is now overwhelmingly immigrant, largely undocumented, and heavily made up of women. I'm also proud that the majority of the elected UF executive board are women. My work with the UFW is personal, from being a Latina and being an immigrant. Not long ago, I fasted 5 days in Seattle over retaliation against dairy workers who complained about grievances such as wage theft. During the fast, I led a delegation to a Seattle headquarters of a big corporation buying from these dairies. We rhetorically pushed back against security guards trying to block us from talking to anyone. Finally, a company official came down to meet with us in the lobby of a big skyscraper. "There is nothing I can do," this man exclaimed. He said we should send them our grievances in writing. "We can't take sides," he added. "We're not asking you to take sides," I replied. "We're asking you to get the dairies to meet with us." He still resisted. Then one of the immigrant dairy workers, a woman named Josefina Luciano, stepped forward. She had been kicked in the face by a cow. 11 of her teeth were knocked out. She nearly died. For a long time, she could not even kiss her 3 young children. "If you won't listen to me, then at least look at me," Josefina demanded in Spanish as I translated. She opened wide her disfigured mouth. "I was kicked by a cow. I was in a pool of my own blood, and no one even knew how to call the ambulance. Later, my employer falsely claimed I was not a full-time worker, and I lost my worker compensation benefits." This company man soon had tears in his eyes. "There are other workers who want to share their stories," I told him, and offered to translate. "No, I'm from Puerto Rico," he said. "I speak Spanish." Another female dairy worker spoke about how she was sexually harassed in front of her husband. A male dairy worker said he wished he was treated as well as the cows he tends. I have passion within me to help Josefina Luciano and other immigrant workers change their lives. That's what I do, what I do. When he was with you, Caesar said he wanted change to come for farm workers, not because of charity or idealism, but because it's the right and decent and humane thing to do for the men, women, and children who feed us all. That mission remains unchanged. That is the cause to which we in the United Farm Workers remain committed today. Thank you very much, and si se puede.
Thank you very much, Teresa. And as Adam noted, my name is Irene de Barricua. I am Director of Operations and Communications for an organization called Líderes Campesinas. Líderes Campesinas is a statewide network of women farm worker leaders and allies, of course, of the UFW. And so it's an honor to be here today and have this plática. Ask some questions, and
of
thank
course.
You so much for your powerful words and also for your work, right? Not just as president of the UFW, but for managing much of the work beforehand for several years. So it's an honor again.
And Irene marched with us when we marched in August.
I did. I marched. Put in my 18 miles. And very present at the vigil as well. So that's great work. So you touched on many of the issues that some questions that arose beforehand. But let's start with what you spoke on, the Half Moon Bay shooting. The COVID-19 pandemic, wildfires, floods, and the recent shooting in Half Moon Bay have all brought to light many of the inequities that farm workers have been experiencing. These range from lack of health care, mental health, poor living and working conditions, and poverty wages, as you know and noted. Although much progress has been made in California thanks to the work and lead of the UFW, Many of the same issues brought up in Cesar Chavez's Commonwealth Address in 1984 continue to be relevant today. We would like to hear from you a little bit more on a few of those issues, one of them being wages. The fight for higher wages and benefits have always been a part of la lucha, the struggle, and being unionized is key in many industries. The overtime law passed successfully, as you mentioned. However, many farm workers are finding that their employers will do anything to avoid paying them overtime, such as cutting their days and making it impossible for them to work those extra hours. Is there any plans to try and change that?
You know, like I said in my comments, the laws in the books are not the laws in the fields. Farm workers are entitled to overtime pay. And the employers use that to anger the workers against the UFW. Because they're saying, see, because of the UFW, now you cannot work more hours. Unfortunately, the workers are coming to us to let us know that the employers get them to pay to work 40 hours and get them paid. And instead of paying them overtime, they make them work more hours, pay them in cash, but not the overtime. The only way is for farm workers to understand their rights. Why is it that is in this industry, we are okay with employers not following the law? When any other industry, any other business, small businesses, if they have to pay overtime, they do it. We need to make sure and understand that these growers are breaking the law, and we need to understand that farm workers, in many cases, are afraid to speak up.
Thank you. Very true. And I did forget to mention that with online viewers, there will be a chance for some questions, and they could just be written in the chat. So just want to make sure to say that. And thank you, Teresa. So in regards to housing, everyone throughout the nation saw the conditions that farm workers were living in. Can you tell us a little bit of what the UFW has been doing, and how can we encourage more oversight or demand more oversight of the conditions of the housing?
You know, I have talked to many people, and they come to me and tell me, you know, but now we're finding them. We are giving them cash, financial penalties, and that doesn't help the workers. The workers already went through horrible working conditions and living conditions. It affects many workers. It affects those who are undocumented and afraid to speak. It affects those workers who come with a H-2A visa, which is a temporary visa. Those workers are 100% under the control of the employer because they live in the premises. They transport them to work, from work, into the store. So when a worker has some issues, they don't even know who to talk to. The important thing is we're not going to be able, the UFW is not going to be able to do the work. We all need to do the work at every level. Mm-hmm. Farm workers who sometimes don't know their rights, us who are buying, who are the consumers, and we can go to the stores and say, who sells? Who are you buying from? How are your workers being treated? It takes a village. I truly believe it takes a village, and it's going to take all of our efforts to be able to make a difference.
Definitely. Great. In regards to healthcare, I had some questions, and I know the UFW was also a contributor to the UC Merced Farm Worker Health Study that was just released. This brought attention many issues and conditions that we are already aware of as well, particularly in the areas of working conditions, housing, food insecurity, and civic participation. The study attempts to assess the current health of farm workers by focusing on the experiences with COVID-19, physical health, mental health, women's, and reproductive health. More than half of farm workers in California are without health insurance and continue to work with undiagnosed illnesses, whether it be valley fever, asthma, and other physical ailments. And as we pursue a more inclusive and affordable healthcare system, can you share what role the UFW has had in ensuring a better pathway to healthcare services?
You know, you cover a lot of things there, but mm-hmm. just think about it. In California, farm workers were deemed essential. Well, not in the country, not only in California, but they were never treated as essential workers. They were not provided masks. They were not informed of the symptoms of COVID. And we react to that by saying, what are we going to do? And we provided masks, we provided information. However, as long as we have workers who are undocumented, who work seasonally, who work 5-6 months a year to support a family, they're not going to make a priority their health. Their priority is how they're going to support their family here and in their countries of origin. So in order to get to that point, in order to get to a point where farm workers are going to feel free to ask and to go to a doctor, they're going to have to earn a decent living. They're going to have to know that if they go to a doctor, nobody is going to deport them. Nobody is going to share that information. Even when they wanted to get vaccinated, mm-hmm. they were afraid to call any clinic because they were afraid to give their information. Until we started doing clinics, you know, with the farm worker. But it's fear a lot of the times that motivates workers to do or don't do the things that that are good for them.
Definitely. So that brings me to what really the overall cause, right, of many of these issues is the immigration status of many workers. Many of the abuses and savage conditions, as Cesar Chavez referred to them in his speech, are due to the fact that they live in the shadows as a result of their incomplete or non-existent citizenship status. The UFW has been working for years to address immigration policies and a pathway to citizenship. Can you tell us, I know you did mention right now about the Farm Worker Modernization Act. Can you tell us about some of the progress that has been made and current key policies being pursued? And how can the public contribute and help?
You know, I don't think sometimes many consumers really understand the importance of this workforce. If you think about it during the pandemic, where we would go to the store and we couldn't find toilet paper, we panicked. Everybody was panicking. What are we going to do? Just imagine that you would have gone to the store and you don't find the food that you need to feed your family. So it is, when you talk about immigration, unfortunately, it's a very partisan issue. Mm-hmm. And for the first time, like I said, we were able to get 30 Republicans to support the Farm Workforce Modernization Act. We also have learned in the movement that it takes many tries and it takes years to be able to accomplish the things that we want to accomplish for farm workers. And immigration is one of them. People, politicians play with the lives of these men and women who are sitting there, who would love to go and see their family members, but they can't. So the next 2 years, as long as we have a Republican majority in Congress, we see it very difficult that we're going to move any bill. But this is an opportunity for us to be able to really, President Biden would sign it if he got to his desk. Mm-hmm. So it is an opportunity for us to really work on areas and states and where we want to change who is representing us. Without this workforce, we don't have food security in this country. We don't have food in our tables. We have food that would come, God knows, from somewhere else. We're going to keep fighting, but it's going to take, like I said, these next 2 years, it's going to be very difficult.
Okay. Well, we're here to fight with you.
Thank you.
Thank you. We have a question here about unemployment hazard pay. We have seen farm workers working in extremely hazardous conditions, and we recognize that the UFW has helped California lead the nation by implementing heat and pesticide protections, among others. Still, farm workers are often seen working in hazardous conditions, and others are left without work in unforeseen circumstances, such as the natural disasters. Mm-hmm. Most do not qualify for unemployment benefits, and many do not receive hazardous pay. There is a new bill in California being introduced, SB 227, which presents a safety net for all, a wage replacement during events in which excluded workers, like our essential farm workers, are left without work. Can you speak on that or any other issue or or law regarding wage replacement for farm workers?
You know, that is very important. When farm workers were deemed essential workers, any federal program would not help them because the majority of them are undocumented. And that disqualified them immediately. Working together with USDA, our sister organization, the UFW Foundation and the UFW, for the first time, we were able to get from the federal level some financial help for farm workers. And each farm worker can apply to receive $600. No matter if how many people are in the family, everybody, if they work during the pandemic, would qualify. But the problem is that we have to get to these type of things. Climate change, as we're seeing it right now, it is affecting all of us, but it affects farm workers first. If it rains, they're there. If there's fire, they're there. But they have to be there. If we could get something in California, but we need to, the problem is that because they don't have protections, we have to go state by state. And not only takes a lot of time, it is something that many farm workers, they will retire and they will not see the benefit of it. We cannot continue to be treated as second-class citizens. We're not. Mm-hmm. We put foot on the table of every single person, and we need to start making decisions that benefit and protect these workforce.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you very much. And in regards to labor shortage, we know that this is something that has impacted the agriculture industry for many years now. And H-2A workers, which are guest workers that come from Mexico and several other countries, have been increasing throughout the years as well. Recently, there have been talks of decreasing the pay of these H-2A guest workers, which in turn can impact the wages of workers who reside here. Any thoughts on this? And does the, a separate part too, does the UFW foresee any plan or have any plans of unionizing guest workers, H-2A workers?
Like I said, we have an issue of approaching H-2A workers because of the control of the employer. Their abuses at the domestic level, but these workers are abused even worse. Lowering the wages of these workers is not acceptable. There is a bill that is being introduced that we're going to fight. We cannot allow it that farm workers are getting paid less when they work harder and under more and more difficult conditions. So we will fight against a bill like that, and we're going to fight against a bill like that. And we don't want, and they don't deserve that wage to be lowered. As it is, many workers, when they come with this through this visa program, when they get here, if the employer says, you know, I can't pay you the minimum wage I'm supposed to pay you, I'm going to pay you $3-4 less. They have to accept it. They're already here. They need to send money to their family. And they don't even know who to talk to because they come from different countries. So the abuses exist. Like I said, the laws in the books are not the laws in the fields. So yes, we would love to organize and unionize these workers.
Great. Thank you very much. All right. So as we all know, it's Women History Month. And so congratulations to all the women. In recognition of Women's History Month and on behalf of Líderes Campesinas, a farm worker and women-led organization, I want to especially thank you for being that inspiration and example to all women and girls. Your role as the first female president of the largest and most recognized farm worker union is a remarkable and well-deserved achievement. Many women helped pave that path alongside Cesar Chavez, such as Dolores Huerta, Ellen Chavez, and hundreds of other advocates and farm worker leaders. Can you tell us what or who inspired you and led you to be where you are today? And any advice to those who have a desire to defend the rights of farm workers?
You know, I grew up, like I said, with a grandmother who was Zapotec. In that culture, women are very strong. Women are very independent. You know, it's not the typical culture that we see in many cases in Mexico. So my grandmother inspired me to try things that I would have never thought I would try. But I think one of the things that we need to understand and that we all need to learn is that we should not let others define us. You know, they call us illegal They call us wetbacks. They call us, you know, they talk about us because we don't speak the language. I remember when I was learning English, I wanted to try to get rid of my accent so badly. Until one gentleman, an older gentleman, said, "Don't. When you have an accent, that means that you speak at least two languages." And that is what we need to be proud of. We need to understand that other names that people are giving us don't define us. Don't let our young children, women, allow those words to stop them, to hold them back, to not let them grow. I think that is very important. We define ourselves. We don't care what other people say about us.
Nice. Very true. Thank you. Okay, so I'm going to go to the last question that I have, and then I'm going to go to questions from the audience. It's coming up to be Cesar Chavez's birthday on March 31st, which is also recognized as a day of service and community learning. If you would make one wish for Cesar Chavez, what do you think that wish would be? And in addition, what are some forms of service and learning you would recommend?
He wanted to have farm workers respected for who they are, for what they do, paid with dignity, treated with dignity. And I think that's what the work we're continuing to do, because unfortunately we have not been able to reach that. I think sometimes we assume that somebody else is going to do the work, that somebody else is going to be in an activist, talk to children who need it, talk to farm workers who might need some help. We cannot leave it to anybody else. We need to be the ones to take the action. We need to be the ones to take the first step. And I'm talking about everybody. Yeah. Because if we expect somebody else to do it, it's never going to get done.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Okay, so I'm going to go to some of the questions from the audience. I'm going to pick a couple of them. Let's see here. How can farmers of color from different immigrant communities work together? Is racial justice important in understanding farm workers' struggles?
Yes. And you know, that's what I said earlier. Through history, farm workers have come from different places. And the growers were very good at putting us against each other. We have the same. As long as we are being oppressed, we need to be together to fight for our rights. If we allow other ones to pin us against each other, then they're winning. And that is what is happening in our country right now. We can't allow that.
Definitely. Thank you, Teresa. How can we identify and avoid buying food grown by farms that resist unionization and overtime pay?
Talk to your stores. Ask them where they get their fruits and vegetables from, their meats, their dairy. Ask them who those farms are and ask them if they have a union contract. They're going to tell you, "I don't know." They know. They know. Don't just accept that answer, "I don't know." And ask, why can't you find out? Why don't you go ahead and ask them how they do and find out how they treat the workers? Again, we have to be a voice for the workers, because being undocumented keeps them quiet.
Yep. Very true. What increased dangers face farm workers as a result of climate change? What opportunity could this mean for building broader support for farm workers among those worried about fires, floods, etc.?
Farm workers are at the front of climate change. When the temperatures are very high, you're going to see farm workers there. When it's raining, you're going to see farm workers there. When there's a fire, you're going to see farm workers there. I think we need to understand and accept to begin with that there is climate change. If we just keep looking the other way, nothing is going to get done. Farm workers, and one of the things that we do, we listen to farm workers to see what it is that they want us to do. And most of people in most areas, everybody has a voice at the table except farm workers. Growers with USDA, with the federal government, have a seat at the table. but not farm workers. And sometimes we assumed that we know what is important to them, but we don't ask them. I don't think a person should be working when the fires and the air quality is so bad they can barely breathe. I don't see that why farm workers should be working when it's raining. When in their videos, if you go to a webpage, the farm workers are underwater up to their knees and they're working. Nobody else in our country is expected to do that. So we need to stop that, and we need to understand what climate change, I'm not an expert at climate change, but we need to understand what needs to be done to protect these men and women.
Definitely. Well, this is a good follow-up, clever question here to what you were speaking about. How different would pay and working conditions be if farm workers were white, male, and all documented?
I think we all know the answer to that. They would be paid very well. They would not be working when it's raining, when there's a fire, during the pandemic. The difference would be immense. The fact that our workforce is mostly undocumented, it's why people take advantage of our workers. But if they're white men, undocumented, they could get anything they want.
I believe that to be true. And so we know AB 2183 passed, and that was a great logro, right? Achievement. And so how can we support more farm workers now to become unionized and or support union workers winning good contracts?
You know, many workers, probably a big majority of workers, don't even know that we marched in California. If you think about it, they live in rural communities. They work long hours. They don't have time to watch TV and listen to the news and understand what this bill does. But sharing with, if you live in a farm worker community, share with them that this is not an easy way to vote for union representation. It's a safe way to vote for union representation. When a worker loses his job or her job because they're organizing, now they can get their job back and the employer would be fined for doing things like that. But farm workers need to understand what this bill is giving them. Mm-hmm. And we need to talk to them. We need to spread the word. We need to help them understand. Fear is something that is not easy to control. But help them understand what the protections they're going to have right now. And again, as a consumer, if you demand that the stores that you buy from are buying from growers who are either... To me, under the union contract is the only way we can certify that workers are not being abused. I think if we start demanding as consumers, that it would be very helpful for the future of farm workers.
Thank you. And speaking also off of that question, I know that the organization ALAS, which is in Half Moon Bay, mm-hmm. Ayudando Latinos a Soñar, have been tending to many of the, you know, filling gaps, right, in inequities, addressing those, especially in relation to mental health. I know that there was a mention of really wanting UFW presence there. As we know, those under a union contract have all the protections that have been mentioned, right, and overall have a better livelihood. Is there any way to, if there is a rural community where there isn't as much UFW presence, to work with community-based organizations?
Absolutely. Absolutely. We went to try to talk to these workers. ALAS is the organization that has the trust of these workers. So we went with them trying to help them answer their questions, see what their needs were. But even then, they had a hard time speaking with us because they don't know us. They were afraid. Mm-hmm. Many of these workers are willing and ready to go back to work under the same conditions because they need it. So, yes, working with organizations that want to protect the life, the work, the well-being of farm workers, it's definitely something that we need to do.
Yeah, great. Thank you. Okay. You spoke about Maria Isabel being 17 years old and dying due to harsh conditions. Is the UFW looking into organizing to build political momentum for the push of the CARE Act to pass?
You know, the farm worker, the UFW has been working for 62 years in trying to get this help for farm workers. when Maria Isabel died, we marched again. We fought. We demonstrated until we were able to protect these workers. The work that needs to be done, it's uphill, and we're gonna have to continue fighting the fight. And having people like you who understand and want to support workers, it is going to be able to make a difference in any legislation that we can get passed, including the FAIR Act.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. And this is an online question. Do other unions treat you with respect?
Me, personally? Yes. Yes. I believe so. Very much so. Very much so. I don't know. I do believe that it is because, like I said in my comments, I stand on the shoulders of others. And I think the respect comes first for the work that we have done for 62 years. Mm-hmm. And just that I represent that institution, it comes together. So, yes, on top of that, unions have told me that they believe that if it wasn't because of the UFW, the labor movement would not exist as it is right now.
Yes. Thank you, Teresa. Is there any way you know to connect the consumer to the reality of the farm worker? In other words, create a link between worker, product, and user.
You know, we have in our social media a lot of videos that you would always see that farm workers are sharing their working conditions. And the majority of these workers are not don't have a union contract. We have in the UFW website a list of companies mm-hmm. under contract. So if you go to those mushrooms, we're talking about mushrooms. If you go to these big stores, to Albertsons, to any store that you buy from, ask them if they work from this farm. Ask them if they buy from this farm or if they buy from Monterey Mushrooms. And if they don't buy from Monterey Mushrooms, why not? This is the company that gives the workers the benefits and the pay and the respect that everybody deserves. So why not? We need to, like I said, as consumers, be more vocal. And if, like I said, join our social media and you will see all these videos and comments from workers about how bad they have it.
And the UFW was also a part of the implementation of the Equitable Food Initiative?
Yes, right? That is correct. That is an organization that we started and that has impacted workers, about 30,000 workers in the United States and Mexico mm-hmm. and Guatemala by coming together and giving, the key of it is giving the workers a voice.
Yes.
And not assume that, you know, the employers for the most part understand and assume that they know what the workers need, and they have no idea.
Great. Thank you. And I have one last question from the audience. And you sort of touched on this as well, but how can members of the general public support better conditions for farm workers?
Speak up, be their voice, donate to the UFW. The work that we do, we survive. You have no idea how many great people donate to the UFW, but we survive from the support, the social media, or some influencers. That now I'm not a social media person. I don't understand it, but this is something that everybody is watching now. Speak on your social media about farm workers issues. Talk about why you don't agree with the way they're being treated. Why you don't agree that the farm workers don't have legalization just because a political party doesn't want to support it.
All right. Thank you. Thank you so much. And I know that there's so much to cover, right? So little time, but you covered a lot during your speech. And thank you for having this discussion with us.
Thank you very much for having me here. It's really an honor to be here with you, knowing that CSER started it here 40 years ago. So that is, I really appreciate you inviting me.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. You've been listening to the Commonwealth Club of California. Hear thousands of our podcasts on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and Stitcher. If you like what you've heard, please consider supporting our work and help us bring 500 programs a year to listeners like you. Go to commonwealthclub.org/donate. Think your way around the world with our travel programs to exciting domestic and international destinations. And when you're in the Bay Area, please join us live at our events. Thank you for listening and for your support.